The object they found a ring around, what kind of an object was that? I'm having trouble believing that an asteroid could have a ring. Over to you, Mike. Roger, it was an asteroid, or they were photographing it as an occultation of an asteroid, and people thought that they had messed up their timing, and, you know, their software wasn't working properly. Several people got the triple blackout, you know, for a fraction of a second or a second, and then the asteroid a little bit longer, and then another ring as it passed by. So yeah, it was. There's one up there that people photographed a ring around, and like I said, multiple people did it. So it wasn't like a mistake. Back over to you.
Now I wonder if you guys have heard about the so-called Event Horizon Telescope Array. Now this is a very long baseline telescope being used. Multiple telescopes. These are millimeter wave telescopes running at numbers like 200 to 400 gigahertz. The ALMA, A-L-M-A array in Chile has something like 60 individual dishes all operating at these millimeter wave frequencies. You've got another millimeter wave telescope at the South Pole. You've got one in Hawaii. You've got some in the United States. And what they've done over the last month is I think they took I don't know how many days worth of data of the Cassiopeia A, which is the black hole device in the center of our galaxy. At millimeter wave frequencies, you can see through the dust and you can see these devices. So they have gathered this data from five, six, seven millimeter wave telescopes that are separated by most of the diameter of the Earth. Let me drop this. And they're running very high-speed data at these frequencies, very broadband telescope. The data that they collect on a hard drive has got so many gigabytes to it that you could not ship that data. What they have literally done at each one of these telescope sites is they have gathered the data on the hard drive. All of the hard drives were shipped to MIT, where they're all going to be processed. It's going to take most of a year to process the data. But when they process the data, they believe they're going to get a nearly three-dimensional picture of the event horizon of the, I believe it's an 8 million solar mass black hole that's in the center of our galaxy. They believe they're going to get a picture of that device by the so-called Event Horizon Telescope Array. I wonder if you've heard about that one, Mike. And then I'm going to pass it over to Paul, which he probably has heard about also. K1MJN first, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Roger, Dick, I heard about it. I read about it online. I also recently visited the Very Large Array, where they pretty much do the same thing. They put all their data on drives, and they take them to another town to have them processed. I really don't understand it. I asked them a bunch of questions when I was out there, and nobody could really give me a good answer, the people who were at the visitor center at least. So yeah, it's very exciting stuff going on right now. Okay, back over to you, or I guess back over to Paul now. This is K1MJN. It's been a pleasure, Dick. I'm clear.
Before you leave, Paul, here we go, Mike. What was the question that you asked that you didn't get an answer to?
They're running 27 80-foot diameter dishes at 50 gigahertz, and they're recording all this data and combining it, and how are they doing their interferometry? Are they doing them in pairs and then in groups, or I don't know how they're doing that. How are they timing it accurately enough to do interferometry? Those kind of details, they couldn't answer those kind of details.
Yeah, this comes close to one of the explanations that I give to people as to where does an antenna pattern come from. When it comes to setting up two antennas side by side with a bar in between the two, and they're both aimed at the same source, and you take the signal and combining it with a power divider, power summer, and you combine the two signals, as you rotate that interferometer, you can see how one of those antennas is going to move forward closer to the source, and one's going to be moving away. So therefore, one's going to get an advancing phase, and one's going to get a retarding phase. At some particular mechanical angle of rotation, you suddenly get the two signals. One is 90 degrees positive, the other one is 90 degrees negative. That means 180 degrees out apart, and you're going to get the first null in the antenna pattern. And you keep rotating further, and you get the next peak, and so on. So an interferometry pattern with two elements makes a lot of sense. In the case of a parabolic dish antenna, the two elements that could be the equivalent at the outer edge of the dish, you take the outer square inch of the dish on the right side, the outer square inch of the dish on the left side, and combine those two signals, you can see how that's an interferometer. And then you move a little bit closer to the center of the dish, and you combine those two signals as an interferometer. Well, if I combine all of the elements of the dish simultaneously, and that's what the dish does, the signal gets an angle of incidence, angle of reflection, reflected off the surface, and it all comes to the feed horn. And the feed horn, by Mother Nature's favorite algorithm, it adds all those individual voltages. Let me drop. So that overall antenna pattern you get from that dish is really all of those individual pixels of the dish all acting as an interferometer. Are they acting in pairs? They don't have to. As long as you've got the phases correct, you're allowed to add as many of those signals together simultaneously in order to get the composite pattern. In the case of the Event Horizon Telescope, you have to know the exact three-dimensional coordinates of your target. Let me drop. Let's call it the right ascension and the declination. So therefore, you know where the target is located. You know with extremely high accuracy where each of your individual very long baseline interferometer telescopes are located. You know one's in Hawaii, and you know it's the nearest inch on the surface of the Earth in latitude, longitude, and altitude. So you know the exact address of each one of your radio telescopes. And you know the Earth is rotating. You know the exact axis of the rotation of the Earth. You know exactly how fast it's rotating. Therefore, Hawaii, at this instant of time, is moving away from the source, while Africa is moving toward the source. So you can crank back out the rate of change of motion. And therefore, in the computer, you can make Hawaii and Africa sit still by cranking back out the rate of rotation, and you know exactly how much phase it's adding to the signals being picked up. Once you crank back out all of the rotations, knowing all the locations, you now have created the equivalent of one great big dish, almost the diameter of the Earth. Is that starting to make some sense, Mike? K1MJM, K2LIW, the TechNet.
Roger, Dick, I understand two, but I asked them how they were combining 27 at the very large array. Are they combining them in pairs and then pairs again, or are they doing them all at the same time? And is their timing accurate enough to handle the 27 of them, which are close to a mile apart, each one, out in the hot sun and the wind? That was more my question, not necessarily the details of how the interferometry works.
It is my guess that when you come to the ALMA array in Chile, which is a whole bunch of dishes, they are being combined locally as if it was one composite dish at that location. That's my guess. When it comes to the other long baseline signals coming from Hawaii and Africa and Europe and South Pole, once you know the rate at which the Earth's rotation and the three-dimensional angles or adding or subtracting phase, and you crank that rate of phase back out to create a negative Doppler, if you know what I mean, then the best you can do is to combine them all simultaneously. Very similar to what's going on when you stack those signals that you measure with your telescope. In theory, you are adding them all together simultaneously when you stack them. That gives you the best signal-to-noise ratio. I am guessing they are adding them all together at once, and they might be weighting the average a little bit. In other words, because the total area of ALMA is greater than the total area of the millimeter wave telescope at Hawaii, they may be adding the ALMA signal together with a little bit higher gain, if you know what I mean. So weight average, but I believe they're being added together all simultaneously, because that's going to give you the best possible signal-to-noise ratio. Over to you, Mike, K2LIW.
Roger, Dick, sounds good. Yep, it's something to think about, and I will definitely consider that while I'm contemplating it. All right, thank you, Dick. K1MJM, back over to you.
Let's see if Paul, I wonder if you've done any reading about this Event Horizon Telescope Ready, where they've just taken the data. It's going to take them a good fraction of a year before we see the first picture, and if they're successful, we're going to see a picture of the black hole in the center of our galaxy, which is something like 23,000 light years away. WS2N, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, and good evening, Mike. One of those groups of antennas, I don't think it was the Event Horizon, it was the other one Mike was talking about, where they take all the data, and there's so much of it that they have to take a bunch of hard drives, and it's so much that they can't transmit it, so they physically take all these hard drives to one location and put it into a supercomputer. So, listening to all the factors that were involved with the interferometry, I can see why they're doing that. But yeah, that was fascinating to me that you couldn't just transmit the data. It was just so much of it. So, just to go back to that other camera for a second, the CID, the charge ejection device. I found the name of it, looking for blooming, they call it. Blooming is a problem when the light streams over to the other pixels. And this camera, apparently it's equivalent of like thousands or millions of these capacitors, each pixel. Each pixel is a capacitor, so each one retains its charge, and it doesn't discharge until you sink to ground, and they all go to ground at the same time, and then they discharge, and then they can actually take a good picture. But because of this, if a planet or a star is moving or something, it's almost got memory, and then the next picture is taken, and they can clearly see some kind of a change. So it sounds like a good camera, and apparently it's working out. I don't want to time it out. Back to you guys.
The charge injection device camera, is that the one that was put on the International Space Station? Paul, you may have said that and I may have missed it. Over to you, Paul.
Yes, that's the one that went up on the last Dragon. They installed that, actually. It was in a pressurized area, so they brought it in. One of the big modules, the Kaibo module. One of the, when you see an interview with an astronaut, they're usually in the Kaibo module or the Destiny module. And Kaibo is the one with the airlock, and they put it in the airlock and they send it out. Now, that's where they send the CubeSats out. In this case, it was the box that they were able to grab with the robotic arm, and the robotic arm, the Japanese robotic arm, a whole bunch of robotic arms on the space station, and the Japanese one got a hold of it and attached it to the patio outside, and they're running tests on it, and they're very successful, apparently, and they're happy with the results.
The next major launch that we have to look forward to, Paul, you probably said it, but I had stepped away from the rig for a little while. The next major launch that we're likely to be able to watch either on the internet or even possibly watch as it flies by our house. How long from now, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW?
We have another one going up from 39A in a week or so, and then another one on June 1st. Yeah, probably less than a week on the next one, but to me that's not important. The June 1st one is very important because that brings up cargo to the space station. So that's the one I'll be following next, and they'll be returning that booster to Florida, landing in Cape Canaveral. So that's pretty cool. The next interesting launch, though, it's not a big one for payload, but it's brand new for a brand new company run by Peter Beck. It's going to take off from the North Island in New Zealand probably as early as tomorrow, but probably, you know, maybe within say 5 day period. That you have a 5 or 10 day window when we drop it. It's called the electron rocket, and he gave it that name because the turbopumps, instead of running on, you know, some kind of small rocket exhaust, which is normally what they use to run the turbines, instead of doing that, running turbines with electric motors and lithium ion batteries, and going to be pressurizing the system with that. And it's only a 60-foot long rocket. The goal is to, at about 4 feet in diameter, the goal is to put 500-pound objects into orbit. So at least we can do it. It's all a carbon fiber rocket. It looks like a black rocket. In fact, the tanks themselves are carbon fiber. So it's extremely light. And he's been working on it since 2006. So we'll see. The name of the company is called Rocket Lab. So that's what I want to see. I've got pictures of the launch site he built and rockets. See if we can do this. The goal is to launch, once every couple of weeks, and then eventually once a week. Get the okay from the government of New Zealand to do this. He has nobody to contend with as far as air traffic or boats or shipping lane. He'll be able to launch one right after the other. He's got a manifest that's backed up, and he has to launch the first rocket. The first one is called The Test. Calling it the test, and he's got two more after that. He's going to test as well, so there's no payload on this. And when he gets to the fourth launch, then he'll start commercial operation back there.
Yeah, this sounds fascinating. Let me run by what I think I've heard, and correct me on this one, Paul. The new pumps that are supplying fuel and oxidizer into the rocket engine are going to be electric motors fed with some kind of battery, probably a brushless DC motor. The usual turbines, I think you said they have an exhaust port. Does that mean the usual pumps are a auxiliary power unit, so to speak, or is it some kind of a compressible gas that's running the turbine? So the usual pumps, are they an APU, and the new ones are going to be a pure electric motor? W-S-2-N-K-2-L-I-W.
Yeah, most of them are pre-burners. The Merlin D that SpaceX uses, or the Russian rockets. Most of them are, they're pre-burners. So they're really small rocket engines. And that is what drives the turbines, and then there's an exhaust that comes out of it. They run up to 100,000 RPMs on these things. Well, to eliminate that, now that exhaust really essentially is not really adding much to thrust. By having this system, 100% of it, 100% of the thrust is going to be for, nothing's going to be used to run any kind of turbines. The turbines are going to be driven by these motors, batteries, lithium ion batteries. Got 9 of these rockets in place for the first stage and one for the second stage. Roughly each one is roughly around 5,000, so it's like 45,000 pounds of thrust. Doesn't sound like much when you drop it. So he's only putting a 500-pound thing into orbit. And he had an impulse of 313 or something. So, it's extremely light rocket. And let's see, then he has the second stage, and that'll be around 5,000 pounds. So it's equivalent to like one 747 engine, but on an extremely light rocket, you know, lifting a 747. And then, you know, the tank is big enough to drive it for about 2 or 3 minutes to get it actually above the common line over 100 kilometers. And then that next stage ignites, takes it to orbit back here.
In the case of a brushless DC motor, with the right kind of driving electronics, you can make that motor rotate at any speed, very close to zero, up to maximum number. You've got complete throttling capability and a tremendous amount of torque capability. That sounds to me like it's got a lot more adjustability than the ordinary turbine-type pumps. Is that the main reason why he is doing it that way as opposed to the traditional way? Has he said what the main advantages are, Paul? K2RIW?
Well, you're saving on every rocket has to have this other smaller rocket. The exhaust of that rocket is lost. You're losing thrust on by having that exhaust run the turbine on top of everything. The whole rocket is 100% 3D. You know, additive manufacturing is the proper name for it. So, you know, it's printed out, 3D printed rocket. So I just want to see how Peter Beck makes out with this thing. Been pushing this for since 2006, so it's up to 11 years. He'll finally be able to get his first orbital rocket up. I definitely want to see how that goes. We have one in America that's going to be doing it very shortly, too, called Vector. Not the same type of setup. Eventually, Vector is going to be reusable. Peter Beck's machines are just going to be tossed into the ocean, which always seems like a waste to me. Back to you, sir.
If the regular pump consists of a turbine and it's got to run into the near vacuum of space at the end of its launch, I think you're telling me that some of the fuel and some of the oxidizer of the main tanks has to be diverted to each one of these pumps to run each one of these pumps. Is that true, Paul? WS2N, K2IW?
Yes. Well, I know they're all like that. You know, the one that running the... Eventually, the BE-4, a very large engine that they're building. The RD-180s by the Russians that launched the Atlas V rockets. The new Vulcan engines that the that are going to be made for the new Vulcan rockets are going to have the same BE-4 engines that are being built by Blue Origin. They haven't figured out which company is going to do it yet. It might be Aerojet Rocketdyne, Rocketdyne company that might do it. They're developing the A1 rocket. They're competing with Blue Origin, but they all have these they call them gas generation systems to run the turbine back to there.
So the new electric motor, it sounds to me like it's a much simpler, possibly higher reliability, more adjustable system. That sounds like quite an advantage. Just a little curious as to why someone hasn't done that sooner, Paul. Over to you, K2RIW.
Yeah, well, everybody would like to have called a closed cycle engine. It's a nice design. We kind of had it with the shell, with the APUs and all. With the RS-25 engine, soon to be the rockets to launch the SLS rockets, eventually to Mars. We're using the old shuttle engines for that. But, time marches on, so, you know, you didn't have the lithium batteries like you have today to drive these things. I think I remember seeing 50-volt system coming out. So you're going to have 9 individual motors, 9 individual battery packs run the first stage. But they say it's going to be a lot less costly. His goal is to like launch once a week. You know, that type of thing. But for now, I'd like to just get the first one off the ground. So it's Rutherford apparently designed this thing. So that's what it's called. Back to you.
These guys are getting very good at taking the first stage of the booster and bringing it back down so it can be reused and landing it. I think I've asked you this question before, but I've forgotten the answer. Have there been proposals or have there been any tests to recover the second stage if there's a two-stage boost? Over you, Paul, K2LIW.
Well, the only one I know that has plans of doing that right now is Elon Musk with SpaceX. He's probably still quite a few years away from doing it. But he's already in the process of his last launch with Inmarsat that he launched to northerly light, probably 60 degrees north. Instead of that dumping that first stage into, second stage into the North Atlantic, where it would have normally gone, he kept it in orbit all the way around for a whole orbit. And then deorbited. You know, he had a rocket engines on that to slow it down and deorbit it. So he's already starting to practice. That's what he would like to do. You know, he'll launch from, let's say, Cape Canaveral, bring back stage one, land it either on the barge or back to Cape Canaveral, have stage two do a complete orbit, and have stage two eventually come back after it does a complete orbit, and bring it back to Cape Canaveral, or maybe on another barge or something. But that's his goal. Again, long way off, but he thought about this 5, 6, 7 years ago. I remember reading it back there.
That's very crafty. As long as the second stage is at orbital velocity, even a low orbit with a lot of drag, then you can bring it all the way back home, as opposed to putting a barge out there, thousands of miles downrange and collecting it back onto the barge. Very crafty. So, Musk is going to be the first guy to do it. He's predicting he'll get his second stage back to, I guess, Canaveral. So do you think he's going to do that in the next year or two, Paul? K2LIW?
Yeah, he does, but he's always very optimistic. He's always tends to be a year or two behind. So I'm going to guess it's probably 4 years out. For instance, the Falcon 9 Heavy, that's going to be going up probably this fall. Original plans for the Falcon 9 Heavy was 2013, so 4 years ago, so he's behind in that. But he's getting there. That'll launch from Cape Canaveral, 39A. Three Falcon 9s bolted together. He won't do that until he gets Pad 40L, Launch Complex 40, back online. That was the one that blew up when he tried to launch a rocket for Israel, not country Israel, but an Israeli company, Amos, AMOS, 6 satellite, was sitting on top of the launch vehicle when it blew up. It was that last September. So he kind of like wiped out Launch Complex 40, but now in the process of being rebuilt. Once that comes back online, then he'll ship any of the Falcon 9 Heavy or man launch vehicles to Launch Complex 39A back there.
Is there a way of estimating what percentage of Launch Complex 40 got damaged during that explosion and how long it's going to take to be repaired? Okay, Paul.
Well, yeah, it was last September 1st, so here we are going into June. They believe the next possible flight would be in August, I guess late August, for Pad Launch Complex 40. That would put the Falcon 9 Heavy first test flight would be, sometime after that.
I'm guessing one of the most valuable things of a launch pad is the launch umbilical tower, that great big structure that sits alongside of the rocket. did that get heavily damaged, and had, that was part of what they've been rebuilding?
Yeah, that was pretty heavily damaged, as well as the infrastructure itself. You've got all kinds of lines and piping, things that are on the ground. A lot of the tanks and everything survived and didn't blow up. They were far enough away from the launch complex. You know, when I say tanks, oxygen tanks, off the one tank, which is kerosene, you know. So all your killing devices, all that equipment, so... But there was a lot of it, and, you know, a lot of damage. Plus, he shifted, you know, once that blew up, he shifted the rest of the work, or, you know, well, most of his work is the Launch Complex 39A that he was doing anyway, and put a push on that to bring that back online first, which he's done. Had, what, about three or four launches from there already, WS to us.
Does anybody have any further questions for Paul on anything to do with the space report? Or any questions, period? Give me a call letters right now. KQRIW and the TechNet.
Dick, I'm going to turn in a little early. I have some things I do have to do tomorrow morning. So let me get out of here a couple of minutes early. Back to you, Dick.
Okay. If there's no further questions from anybody, I'm going to end the TechNet a little bit early tonight. 73, you all. This was TechNet number 1651. That was Space Report number 251. We intend to be back next week and almost settle the situation on standing wave ratio and how do antenna tuners really work. Almost. Bye bye, you all. K2RIW clear but listening.
RIW K2JAS.
K2JAS, go ahead.
Good evening, Dick. This is Roger, K2JAS. I'm back from Florida, and I just wanted to say hello and see if you're able to copy me.
Yeah, copying very well, Roger. Where are you located now?
I'll join the net again next week. Do take care. It was interesting, your all the information tonight. Thank you.
Hi, yes. Wait a minute now. I got you confused with somebody else. You're not the guy that's starting to do moon baths, are you?
No. I'm in Marlboro, New Jersey, or Morganville, New Jersey. And, no, I'm not doing moon baths. I'm an old friend of Hal's, K6DPZ.
Understand. Okay. Bye-bye for now, Roger. K2RIW be clear.
Yes, K6DPZ. Roger, do you copy, over? K2JAS, K6DPZ. Roger, do you copy, over? K2JAS, K6DPZ, you copy. JAS, K2JAS, K6DPZ, are you a Roger, over? K2JAS, K6 Delta Papa Zulu. K2JAS, K6DPZ. K2RIW, K6DPZ. Dick, you want to meet me on 805? I know you're afraid to talk here, but just slap your hands. Anybody around? Kilowatt 62, Victor Zebra. Anybody around? Kilowatt 62, Victor Zebra.
Tonight at 8:30, W2VL repeater system. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Net tonight at 8:30. W2VL repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. W2VL repeater system.
Kilowatt 6 David Peter Zebra. Testing 12305. West Channel 7, base Long Island City. 12305, Action at 321. Kilowatt 6 David Peter Zebra. Testing to Red Red. Anybody around for radio test? Kilowatt 6 David Peter Zebra. Anybody around for a radio check? Kilowatt 6 David Peter Zebra. Keep 6, Utilita, Zombies. One Island City Transmitter, Remote Base, Oceanside Nipping, 12345. 125. Mux number 1235. About 1 dB return loss. Okay, K6DZZ first, you're up then. Anybody out there not afraid to come out back to me and give me a signal report? This KLOP 6 does about. I know you're going to be intimidated by the president of the club. There's only a president. Not too smart. K6DTZ clear. That is K6 Delta Papa Zulu. Kilowatt 6 David Peter Zebra Mobile. Going to Long Island City via Mobile. Testing. All of us just across the frequency at there. K6 DTC, testing QRZ. Anybody out there for an audio report? Anybody out there for an audio report? This is Kilowatt 6 David Peter Zebra. Mobile. Unidentified station. Use a call and I'll talk to you. You don't use a call. You bury yourself. Bye bye. I've got a call and I use it. Well, I'm not stupid. You are stupid because you don't have a call. You're an idiot. K6DTZ clear. Also, anytime you want to discuss it, tell me where you'll be and we'll discuss it, okay?
You are
you have no call. K6DPC is clear. QRT.
Sound clear.
K6DPC at that station. You don't have brains, you don't have balls. You just put your call down, okay? K6DPC is clear.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
K6DPC, just secure, sir. Anybody out there?
No way.
Come again. Come again.
Tonight at 8:30, W2VL Repeater System.
KD2, KNH, mobile.
Doing Charlie. It's Rich in Toledo.
Good morning, Rich. How was your weekend?
I think I didn't wait for the beep. It was so-so, but I'm doing okay. In the scheme of things, what goes on in the world, I really can't complain.
Well, that's a good thing then. Looks like we're going to have rain all week, but the weekend was beautiful. I didn't get a chance to make it to the Cradle of Aviation Museum. I was wondering how that event went. Did you hear anything?
Really? But I know there are a lot of people there because I'm talking here. You know, they just also had the convention. Not in Dayton, in Xenia, Ohio. They changed the venue because the building was falling apart in Dayton. But I had the guys on 40 meters yesterday coming back on mobile. By the way, do you know when the Weimar Campfest is? And I believe it's an outdoor.
Richie, I don't know. I would have to look at the website to check the calendar.
Well, that's what I'm going to do, I guess. It just makes perfect sense. You know, I'm not going to hire an ambulance to get there, but my friend Barry, F2MB, I'm hoping he'll be back before the Hamfest. Went to South Carolina to visit his grandkids, his son, daughter-in-law, all that nice stuff. But if he wants to go, I'm going to take a ride with him.
That would be great. Hopefully I'll be able to make it as well. Hope to see you there. Just my schedule has been crazy lately. I've got to go away for some training for a week, so, you know, family stuff, Memorial Day coming up. It's, you know, like everybody else. Busy.
Yes, I know. By the way, Memorial Day, we always have a nice thing here because they bring the military, you know, the people that do the recruiting. They send military out here to the very large ball field at Massapequa Park High School. And they're always great. Last year they landed an Osprey. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a plane, but it can also land vertically. They brought in a troop carrier helicopter, then a lot of military there. It was great to see and talk to those people.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's fantastic. Military doesn't get enough recognition, I mean, especially in the papers and whatnot. But I remember as a child, I grew up in Babylon Village, and the National Guard would go through town with tanks and a lot of the guys in trucks and whatnot. And, you know, you actually had a connection to what the holiday was about. And, you know, today it seems like more, everything is morphed into sales.
And nobody cares about these guys. They do hard work, dangerous work. So what can I say? Let me ask you, just bouncing back. The Ham Fest, this is the Briarcliff College in the parking lot.
Yes, that's what I heard. I heard that even though the Briarcliff closed, you know, whoever oversees it, it's still going to be a Briarcliff. But again, that'll be on the website.
I'm sure it will. I'll take a look there today. Because I don't drive anymore with my problems. But I'm not going to hire an ambulance. I did that to get to the Christmas party. I hired an ambulance to go back and forth. But I can't keep doing that, too expensive. But I'm going to see if Barry wants to go. If I can get him to go, we'll come down.
That sounds great. Yeah, I wanted to leave a little pause there in case somebody else wanted to jump in. Didn't want to key up too quickly. But yeah, another week, and we'll see how everything goes. At least all the plants are going to get watered, and everybody should be happy for that.
And that's true, Charlie. Very good. Not to make a big deal about it, but, you know, the end of the month is always rough because me and Patty have always got our tongues hanging out for Social Security checks.
Well, I'm sure if you're dependent on Social Security checks, it's, you know, always the case. Thank God we have that at least. But on that note, I'm going to have to jump out for 10 minutes. I got to grab a cup of coffee at the 7-Eleven, and I'll be back on, Rich. 82 KNH clear, 73 for a few.
Okay, Charlie, well, you made my day very bright. It's always nice to get on here and talk to you, the guys. Give me a call when you come back. I'll be around. KNH. I'll be listening. And to Leo.
And to EO, KD2KNH.
Charlie, and to EO.
Right, I'm back with coffee, but I'm only a couple of minutes from the office, so I figured I'd continue the conversation with you. But, yeah, Monday's never a fun day.
Yep. Where are you? Signal degraded, Charlie.
I was on the service road of the expressway. Now I'm dead center in the overpass, so it should be much better.
All right, whatever. So how long are you going to be on? What, you said you're going to be close to work. What age?
Just got off 57. My office is just around the corner, but just wanted to get back to you.
Okay, Charlie. Well, thank you very much. So if you're not going to stay in here, I'll catch you later. Have a good day. KC2KNH.
So we go. Richie, you have a great day. Pleasure speaking with you as always. 73, KD2, KNH clear.
Thank you. You too, Charlie.
K2 KNB, Kilo Delta 2, Mike Sierra X-ray. K2KNB, KD2MSX, Mobile. O KD two MSX. Mobile from Yapank, New York.
KB2MSX in Korea. We have spoken, I'm not sure. Name here is Rich.
Sir, Rich, I believe we have spoke, and I usually speak to Richie, K2KMB also. But it's been a long time. I'm Tyler. I'm from Ridge, relatively new ham here. But just figured I'd hop on. I got a short commute here into Yapang today, so got a couple of minutes.
Hey, fine, Tyler. Well, I'm glad you gave me a call. Yep, got up around 7 o'clock, and I'm waiting. Patty is making, we'll make breakfast in a little while. Joey done to get a grandson for me.
Rich, I lost you after making breakfast. I don't know what happened there, but the transmission came through choppy.
We have a jammer.
All right, Rich, I'm going to say 73KD2MSX. I'm pulling into work now, so maybe I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Tyler, you take care. KB2MSX and Torio. Yeah, we have a very, very sick person.
Just once more, N2EO, KD2, Kilo Delta 2, Mike Sierra X-ray. Gonna say 73s again, and I'll be clear, but that last transmission was also choppy.
Emma. You can't, Tyler.
Tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
It's KMB, WB2GSC.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
This is N2ZUC Mobile, listen.
Hello,
6 DPC, Long Island City Base Station, Tennessee. Ready around for radio check, Kilowatt 6 Delta Papa Zulu.
K6 DPZ, K2...
Be advised, K6 DPZ is not allowed to use this frequency. He's been suspended.
Sounding with 805, so I can break my somewhat.
Big deep.
Hi, children. I'm looking at 805. 146, 805, same thing. Play nice, children, will you?
No.
805.
05.
Tonight at 8:30, W2VL repeater system.
Then, as soon as that you see more, I'll be listening.
The station mobile listening, can you come back? This is K6 DPZ.
Tonight at 8:30, welcome to the W2VL repeater.
W1CFK.
Bravo, listening.
Candy. Teach you Candy.
Alpha Golf 3 Bravo, AG3B, transmitting from East Hampton, New York.
Hey, very good. It's funny, I heard the 3D in it, and I must have misunderstood, it must be SD or something. Anyway.